Welcome.
Hey. You know what I think, Bob?
What?
I think that when you talk to most students, the problem they have with most hazmat classes is that they're not engaging, they're not hands-on, and they're just downright boring.
Right. And that is why we only partner with the best. We are not bringing in the B team. That's not our game. We are updating our courses. No stale, no last week stuff or stuff that we don't want to update this thing. We are constantly partnering with new technologies, new stuff. In fact, I said it last week. We got meters upstairs. In fact, I forgot about the suits. We got a box of suits, too. Brand new.
Right, right. Now, it's a little bit difficult on our end to do this because it takes time to redo and keep up with the latest trends for all of our classes. But because all of our instructors are all in the field, hands-on guys, it becomes super hard to be able to even schedule them because they're coming in around work. So you are not dealing with just, again, you know, we teach B team, we don't have B team teach.
I love that. So if you're looking to transform your team's capabilities, please do not hesitate to call us or even email. Actually, you can call us. In fact, I can give you the phone number.
Oh, that's right. We got a new phone number. We never added that to the list.
No, 718-974-9114. And that goes directly to Brian's cell phone. So
on a side note, there's a Chewbacca contest.
Oh yeah, leave your best Chewbacca and there's a $500 gift certificate there. So the hazmatguys.com/hire us and you can reserve your spot because spots are filling up quickly. Ah, yes. So if you're listening to this, the website has dropped.
Yes, it is a beautiful website. People are loving about it. Amazing. We got rave reviews. It hasn't dropped yet. I'm totally making that up.
No, it's next week. No, but next we're week. Doing a double because we're going to be in Massachusetts at the conference. And so we want to make sure that you guys are filled with your quota of knowledge.
And if you're listening sponges. To this going, God damn it, I wanted to see them at a conference. We've got so many other places that we're going to be. It's not even funny.
Yes. So conferences wise, we're going to be at OMRA, Michigan, Cold Zone, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Baltimore, and I believe also Utah. That was just added. I don't think that's on this list yet. Also, you can see us on the After Action Report, which is the first Wednesday of every month, April 3rd at 19:30 hours Eastern Standard Time. Long form. Comments are on. We're looking forward to the zingers and the stuff in the talk groups. It's going to be on Facebook and YouTube. Pick what you like. But we are having Greg Knoll on. And then I have confirmation that Mr. Bill Hand will be the next month May guy.
Bill's a good dude. I can't wait to talk with him. I mean, not that Greg isn't. Greg's phenomenal. No, They're all great. You know, like you sit around a bar with them at a conference and they just are such a wealth of knowledge. It's enjoyable to be able to get them on and spread their wealth seed.
And if you know anybody that would be great for the show, like one of those OGs that was there when we were standing up the system, please send me an email because I want to connect with them. I have a long list of people that I want on it. But my email is bob@thehazmatguys.com or you can call us at 718-974-9114 and leave me a message about that thing. I probably won't pick up the phone because...
Yeah,
I haven't figured it out yet.
It's a spam risk. So we're like, no.
It does. No, it doesn't. Oh, all right. We are getting back into our part two of the LNG CNG vehicles thing. We alluded to our starting point.
Right. Cylinders. Yeah. So we definitely want to talk about cylinders. You know, again, with hazmat, product, container, environment, prediction models. So let's talk about the container a little bit. We're going to arrive on scene. We have the possibility of four different types of containers. The type one container, these are our all metal construction, right? Either steel or aluminum. They have thick metal shell and are relatively heavy. The type one cylinders are extremely robust, extremely durable. They are suited for a wide variety of applications. The one thing that is kind of a drawback to them is that they are extremely heavy in terms of vehicle efficiency. They produce a lot of weight, so that car's got to kind of drive around with this super heavy tank. But from a firefighting point of view, from an accident point of view, there's very little problems with these types of cylinders.
Yeah, they're robust.
They are robust. Yeah.
Now, type 2 type cylinders are a metal liner with a hoop wrap. And this is, if you think about the current day SCBA cylinders, this is more where we are. There's like an aluminum inside, and then it's wrapped around because they can use a much lighter and thinner aluminum, but the pressure is going to push, so they wrap it with fiberglass or whatever they use. So the Type 2 cylinders have a metal liner and surrounded by hoop wraps of composite material, such as fiberglass or carbon fiber. And these hoop wraps provide an additional strength and helps to reduce the overall weight. These cylinders strike a balance between durability and weight savings. You know it from the SCBA cylinders. Once the hoop wrap starts shredding and starting to get on, it's out. It's a great medium and it's very applicable, but this is probably where you're going to see a lot of them.
Yeah. Now the Type 3 is just like the Type 2, only there's no hoop wrap. It is continuous carbon fiber overwrap. This is going to make for a thinner lining. Usually because they're doing this, right? They're making a thinner lining because of weight. So they're naturally going to move more towards aluminum than steel. So these are almost always aluminum shell covered by the continuous carbon fiber. The carbon fiber enhances the strength while keeping the cylinder super lightweight. They are used in a lot of commercial vehicles due to the weight to ratio capacity.
I misspoke. The hoop wrap was the old school original, like first gen SCBAs.
Okay.
If you remember back, the ones with the flat top.
The flat top. Yeah.
Yeah. Now today with the round top, you are using a continuous loop. So that's the more correct thing.
Are the SCBAs nowadays, are they carbon fiber wrapped or are they fiberglass wrapped?
I believe they're fiberglass. I don't think carbon fiber I think it's too expensive. I could be wrong.
Yeah. But I wonder if there's a difference between carbon fiber and fiberglass in a fire situation. I mean, we take our SCBA in with us on a fire, so it is relatively, I'm not going to say heat proof, or it is heat resistant much of a degree. I wonder if there's a difference there.
Yeah. And the Type 4, which is kind of like, I would say the more new wave one, is a plastic liner with continuous carbon fiber overwrap. Now, these Type 4 cylinders have a plastic liner, usually made of high-density polyethylene, or HDPE, encased in a continuous carbon fiber overwrap. These are exceptionally lightweight and offer excellent capacities. They are used widely in buses, trucks, and other commercial applications. I've seen these things typically, again, I'm not saying it definitively, but I'm saying they typically are like black.
Yeah.
They're usually because the carbon fiber, it's a darker color.
You can see the carbon fiber, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So the Type 3 and the Type 4, they are prevalent in the commercial vehicles due to their lightweightness, right? So what does that mean to us? Like, why are we even talking about it? Because we need to understand that while, like so many things in firefighting, you know, things are built well when they're not on fire, when they haven't been in an accident. Once you start getting to and responding to a vehicle that has been involved in an accident, these Type 3 and these Type 4 cylinders can see the disadvantage of being lightweight, you know, plastic lined, aluminum lined. So when we're responding to an accident, we need to take care to try to evaluate these cylinders as much as possible.
When you have these cylinders, specifically the CNG ones, right, they're enclosed within steel or aluminum housing. So they have like a protective shield around them. And those shieldings are securely attached to the vehicle body or frame. And these protective structures are specifically designed to safeguard the cylinders in the event of a collision. So it's not like you have a house around the house, which is good.
It is good.
It's a protection thing. It's not a containment thing.
Yeah, for your basic function, again, it becomes great. Same thing with framework. A lot of it is composite metal. It covers a lot of the parts of the cylinder. Sometimes they're literally just there for aerodynamics or for UV protection. What becomes a problem for us is like if we have to go and try to do something with this, whether it's the piping, the tubings, the fittings, it can make it difficult to get in and get where we need to go. So we may have an idea of, oh, we could do this, but now you're being blocked by this framework to even maybe be able to inspect piping or manifolds to be able to see where a leak is coming from.
Another thing is where they're going to be mounted. For the most part, they're on the side rails of the vehicle, on the roof, or behind the cab. And note, I did not say underneath. Because if why fight science? If it's going to go up, then put it on the place that it can easily go up and get out. That's why it's there.
Yeah, and we've got a great story of one of the cabs where the tanks were behind the cab, and we will talk about that in the El Premium.
I like it.
So with these CNGs, it's very easy to add on or tack on extra storage. All you got to do is combine, you know, one tank with another tank, and you've, you know, if they're the same size, you've essentially doubled your capacity, and they don't always have to be in the same place. So keep that in mind as well. You could have a few behind the cab, and then you could have one or two on the side. You could have one on the roof. So they're going to put it wherever they have space for it.
One of the, on each cylinder, you're going to have a valve, and that would allow you to isolate that tank. Now, when we're doing normal operations, all those valves are open because it's kind of like a cascade system. They're all dumping their product into the system. If you have one open and four closed, well, that one cylinder is under a lot of stress.
Now, one of the things that we talk about in class, which we're not going to go into here, is how to open and close those cylinders and valves, because they all work off of electricity. So don't think you're going to reach down and just, you know, open and close a valve and that is it. Although there are, you know, there are safety valves that are manual. There are some of these valves are electrically actuated. The PRD in anything that's CNG, right? Our pressure reducing device. Many of these systems are designed to work at very high pressures. We're talking about like 360 PSI.
3600.
What did I say? Did I say 360? 360. Yeah. No, 10 times what I just said. Is 3600 PSI. Man, that is stuck in my brain today. Vehicle damage and the position may modify the venting gas direction. So what is that? What does that mean exactly? It means that, let's say I had a car that was specifically designed to vent up and out, and now all of a sudden is pointing straight up, and that gas now is no longer going to the roof, but it is now going through the engine compartment, or passing the engine compartment, or passing electrical work. Just kind of keep that in mind, that the position of the vehicle is going to change in relation to the vehicle, how the gas is escaping, because it's still going up no matter what position the vehicle is in.
And because of this pressure, this extreme, I'm going to say this extreme, it is a heavy duty pressure. The venting gas may ignite and then extinguish itself. And you're like, wait a second, how does it extinguish itself? The pressure is going so fast that it is unable to stay alight because there's not enough time for it to mix properly. So it might go on fire, go out, and reignite many times.
That's if you've never vented a propane tank, this is sometimes we have a problem with propane tanks. Yeah. And when we're doing liquid, it'll push out so hard that it ends up putting itself out, but we still have product blown out all over the place. So, you know, we got ways of dealing with that, but
yeah. And they're protected with one or more thermally activated PRDs. Right. So if the fire hits a certain threshold, that PRD will shut that solenoid or whatever it is and close it off so that there is no more leaking.
Yeah. If that PRD is actually actively trying to vent gas, it's going to go off somewhere between like 212 and 220 degrees Fahrenheit.
I love it. And typical CNGs or PRDs vent tube locations and venting directions are as follows. A, for side mount and behind the cab system, the PRD venting is routed up a tube vent tube behind the cab or at the rear of the vehicle body. Basically, it's going north.
Right. But this is not true for all of them that are out there because there's exceptions everywhere. Some of the older vehicles, the PRD vent system actually vents downward. I guess this was before they figured out that the gas went up.
Expected the truck to be upside down? I don't know.
Right. Maybe it's like, well, this is only going to vent if there's an accident. So I don't know why they do stuff.
What about roof mounted?
Well, you have, if it's a roof mounted system, there's going to be a tube on the roof that is going to divert and vent to the rear.
on front of body refuse vehicle systems, which I'm guessing are just garbage trucks. A vent tube at the rear vents up and forward.
Ooh, I wonder why up and forward.
I don't know. Maybe the hot garbage. It doesn't like the hot garbage smell.
The hot garbage. Too many people throwing away lithium ion batteries.
Maybe that's it.
Oh, all right. Well, remember, if you've got a vehicle, unlike a structure, you've got a limited amount of product. So when you're responding to one of these, that is definitely something of comfort, because if you have no idea what to do, just wait and it'll put itself out.
Yeah.
All right. Let's chat a little bit about the FMM, which is the CNG fuel management module. We see these heavily on trucks. There are systems in place for cars. They're not as robust or as well defined, but the fuel management module often has a bunch of valves and pressures on them. There's almost always a quarter turn manual shutoff valve that serves to disconnect the fuel storage system from the engine during either maintenance or emergency scenarios. So that FMM can either be independent of the cylinder or integrated into the cylinder housing. Now, why is this important? Because you're not actually turning off the cylinder. When we think about turning off the cylinder, we often think about the very first opening from the cylinder is now completely isolated. This is just isolating the cylinder from the rest of the tank. So you could still have pressurized tubes in there between the FMM and the cylinder that we have to be very, very careful of.
I want to say what is consistently I see in all the classes that we're delivering on the LNG CNG stuff is that people go, oh, I thought the valving was going to be like, you know, like the Home Depot water valve stuff. It is a completely different look.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you know, involved in seeing this, if you're not getting your hands on it, you're going to be a little bit taken aback by what they look like. There are two major types of gauges on them. There is a high pressure gauge, which indicates, you know, like the SCBA. It is honest. That's a very good analogy. Like SCBA. SCBA has 5,000 PSI and then the low pressure side. So the high pressure valve is doing the nominal 3,600 PSI. And then you have the low pressure side, which is going to be your exit pressure or stuff that's coming out of the regulator, about 125 PSI.
Yep. And then with this FMM, there's also the fill port, which is going to be your main connection to the pressurized CNG tank. So it's kind of a direct route.
I love it. And then you have the defuel receptacle. Very fancy. This is the main connection to take the fuel out of the tank. And I believe this is just for like regular operations. I've never used this for like a flaring port.
No, but you definitely could, right? There's no reason why you wouldn't. Although, you know, you turn around and, you know, is it really worth flaring off a CNG truck? It's just going up and out. I'm not quite sure. I'd have to sit and do the risk benefit analysis on that one to say whether or not I would move forward with that. And finally, just as a reminder, because it is critical when working around it, just want to, you know, that half valve shutoff that's on the FMM. Remember, it's only shutting off things to the engine. It is not depressurizing the system, and it is not saying that the cylinder is off.
Like,
all right. LNG, CNG, right? We kind of talk about them interchangeably. They are cousins. And the only reason the system varies as far as like a hazard and response is the extremely cold liquid versus a very high pressure gas. So we are seeing LNG vehicles in place where the economy of scale truly comes into play.
All right. So you got to get this gas or liquid to you. So the transportation vessels, such as trains, trucks, boats, like ferries, let's take a look at these things a little bit more to find out what makes LNG a little bit different than CNG. First off, LNG is stored at a cryogenic temperature of minus 259 degrees Fahrenheit, which converts over to minus 161 degrees Celsius or lower, and lacks the odor, which is a key component here. The PPE should encompass gloves and face shields because of the frostbite, just spraying and whatever, along with methane / flammable gas meters and SCBA.
Yeah. Now, LNG fuels exist as a combination right, of liquid and gas phase at super, super cryogenic temperatures, right? So inside of a tank, you're going to have both liquid phase at that temperature and you're going to have gas phase at that temperature. A completely filled tank could register zero pressure, while an empty tank could indicate 230 PSI. So don't ever, under any condition, take PSI as a way of measuring your tank quality. Now, before, Bob, you had said that LNG can't be odorized. Why?
I'm going to say because the solubility of the mercaptan in the methane. I don't know if that's a strong one. Are you going with that?
I would go with that. I would say those two, you know, when you deal with LNG, not just LNG, but cryogenics, it's very hard to mix cryogenics because you've got different vapor pressures. You have different, not that the properties come together differently, but when you got super cold temperature, those properties do come together. Now, that plays a role in a lot of our response, right? Because you respond to an LNG, you're like, oh, natural gas, I don't smell anything, it's not leaking. Understand, this is where your meter comes into play.
Right. So when you have that, the methane detection systems are pretty much mandatory. Right, we're going to have one sensor that's located in the engine compartment and one is going to be located inside the cab. Now, you got to remember that LNG is extremely cold, and if it's spilled, it will vaporize instantly and dissipate into the air. You're going to see the cloud, okay? Because it's freezing humidity.
I was going to say, is that cloud actually methane? You jumped ahead before I could ask.
See? And also, the LNG fuel storage containers are highly insulated. Because if it's liquefied, they're doing it either because of pressure or by temperature. So if they are insulating these things, they're going to get more bang for the buck for the longer duration, the time frame. So they keep that cryogenic fuel cold.
And we often see these systems mounted on the side of vehicles. They can be up on the roof, but if you think about what Bob said, right, they're insulating it to try to maximize or minimize heat transfer, that delta temperature. So why would we take that and put it up on the roof? Let's take LNG and tuck it under the cab where our normal gas tanks would be.
Now, we talked about before with the CNG, the pressure relief devices for LNG are not thermally activated. So there is no danger of defeating or damaging those reliefs with water.
Now, we didn't really talk about that in the CNG portion because that's part of the firefighting aspect that we talk about it in class. But there is, that sentence holds a tremendous amount of value. Maybe we'll talk about it a little in premium, but it's definitely part of the course. Manual valves are located, when it comes to LNG, the manual valves are located at one end of the fuel tank. Very similar to like a chlorine C-kit. Chlorine one ton, the
B kit.
The B kit, right? Where you have all the valves over at the end. The primary pressure relief valve is also in that assembly, and it's going to go off if it exceeds 230 PSI from the tank during normal operations.
You will also see a red valve, and I will say, do not put the colorblind guy on this.
No, definitely not.
Because he'll be like, cut the red wire, right? And this valve is normally open to allow the fuel to flow to the engine. This is like the fuel to engine valving.
Now, there's a second pressure relief device that is red capped, and this is going to vent at 350 PSI. Now, you may ask yourself, well, why have two pressures? Because that 230 is going to be normal operations. Our 350, that's when it indicates that there's something seriously wrong with the system. Because if it ventilates normally at 230, and I've got pressures well in excess of 230, there is something going on inside that tank. There is a problem.
And there's also going to be a gray vent valve, which is normally closed, but it is opened when they're fueling to relieve the pressure. If you're curious about what the hell I'm talking about, you're going to come to the class.
Yeah. Now, pressure gauges are usually mounted on or near each of the ends of the LNG tank. They don't always coincide with the valves. Okay, so just to kind of say that right up front, you're not going to necessarily find everything all in one spot, but somewhere on that tank will be pressure gauges that are mounted.
Unbelievable. So under standard conditions, LNG fuel systems typically release the pressure through the primary relief valve if the tank pressure exceeds 230 as a result of, let's say, natural expansion in response to ambient temperature, then things are going to change a little bit.
Yeah, so LNG venting is considered normal, right? Just like when we get those calls from the idiots that are driving down the road and they go, I got a liquid nitrogen tank and there's white stuff coming out and we're all going to die. Same, literally the same thing, different product. We just have to remember that if both LNG vents are going off and excessive venting is happening, that may indicate that there's a problem somewhere.
Now, you're saying that we have some premium for the premium people?
Yes. Let's go to premium. We'll talk about the CNG fire that we had with the oil truck.